Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Kevin Moore Show. I'm Kevin Moore, and it is a pleasure to be spending the next hour with you. Our opening musical selection was Promises, Promises, a wonderful song from the great composer Burt Bacharach. And that's what I have for all of you today, the promise that this next hour will be informative, interesting, provocative, and maybe even a little exciting. A promise that our discussions will give you something to think about today and hopefully something to talk about tomorrow. Or what I'd like to think of as a civilized hour of culture and conversation. Well, as I like to do to begin each of our shows, I like to read or share a recent poignant story or an especially interesting essay or some philosophical quotes or thoughts or sometimes even a little poetry that touches or speaks to us all. Well, I have to say that I think this is my most favorite time of the year, Christmas shows, to be able to talk about Christmas, and we're getting in the spirit. We need a little more cold weather, maybe some snow, and then we'll really be rolling a little bit. But a commentary written by Pam Lanham from the Doings, entitled Remember Christmas Past. Very touching little essay. Pam writes, Christmas is a time filled with magic and wonder. We seem to know that instinctively as children and forget it as we grow older. Maybe children experience the sheer joy of Christmas more effortlessly than adults because they're experiencing so many delights of the season for the first time. I think if we as adults spent less time worrying about the Christmas to come and more time remembering Christmas's past, we too would take more delight in Christmas present. I think we need to remember what holiday experiences were like the very first time we experienced them. Try to remember the first time you were old enough to really understand who Santa Claus is and how excited you were to find the presents he left you under the tree and in your stocking. Try to remember the first time you watched Miracle on 34th Street when you couldn't imagine how Mr. Gailey would prove Kris Kringle was the one and only Santa Claus. Or the first time you watched A Christmas Story and how it made you laugh so hard your sides hurt. Try to remember the first time your parents took you downtown to see the lights on Michigan Avenue and the giant tree at Marshall Fields and eating lunch in the Walnut Room. Try to remember the first December 25th you jumped up from your bed and looked out the window to find it was in fact a white Christmas. Or the first time you heard Bing Crosby sing his wonderful rendition of that song. Try to remember the first time you gave a child you love a Christmas gift and how much it brought to you. Try to remember the first time you gave a child you love a Christmas gift and how much joy it brought to watch her open it, even if she was more excited by the box than what was inside. Try to remember the first time you saw The Nutcracker or A Christmas Carol and how you left the performance filled with the joy of the Christmas spirit. Someone told me recently that some people lose a bit of their Christmas spirit as they get older because they've been through so many Christmases that it's hard to get excited about them anymore. I'm going to try to prevent that from happening by taking time each year to remember the first times I experienced the many wonders of Christmas and try to carry those feelings with me. Remember Christmas Past from Pam Lanham. Try to remember the first time you gave a child you love a Christmas gift and how much joy it brought you to watch her open it, even if she was more excited by the box than what was inside. Very touching words, and certainly a great way to kick off the Christmas season and start our Christmas spirit as we get into December, something we all, and I certainly, look forward to. One of the fun things about hosting my radio show is having the opportunity of making the acquaintance of some very interesting, talented, and fascinating people, and our next very special guest is just such a person. He's a man who's spoken to us through his music for many years. We're all familiar with his songs and music because they've become standards that speak to each of us and just simply touch our hearts. The songs like Love of My Life, the classic Olympic theme songs Hero's Dream and If You Believe, signature instrumentals like Rocket to the Moon and Angel Eyes, and songs that I and many others consider to be two of the most tender love songs of all time, Valentine, and especially for Christmas, The Gift. Christmas tradition sparkle and holiday music fills the air as Grammy-nominated piano sensation Jim Brickman embarks on his 30-city holiday tour, Comfort and Joy. Jim Brickman blends Yuletide memories and traditional carols with his popular songs like The Gift, Sending You a Little Christmas, Angel Eyes, and If You Believe. For one night only on Friday, December 2nd, the ever-popular pianist will fill the Batavia Fine Arts Center with laughter, joy, and musical holiday spirit. Brickman makes magical music and evokes warm sentiments, says Billboard magazine. Brickman's special guests are an all-star lineup of fan favorites, including Chris Allen, 2008 American Idol winner, singer Annie Cochran, and electric violinist Tracy Silverman. Jim Brickman's live concerts have become an annual holiday tradition. The gathering of family and friends with a beautiful holiday backdrop of musical warmth and nostalgia. Brickman's music reminds us that faith, love, and togetherness are what we value most this time of year. Join Jim Brickman and friends this holiday season and celebrate the spirit of comfort and joy at the Batavia Fine Arts Center on Friday, December 2nd, and then the next evening, Saturday, December 3rd, at the Dominican University Performing Arts Center in River Forest. Both shows are at 7:30. A man whose distinctive musical virtuosity not only sets the standard but also defines the essence of excellence that personifies pure romance for audiences of all ages. As always, it's both a joy and a distinct pleasure to welcome the award-winning singer, songwriter, performer, musician, and author, Mr. Jim Brickman. Jimmy, welcome back to the Kevin Moore Show.
You have the best introductions of anybody I ever talked to.
Well, I'm glad you don't think it's too long, because I think I need it to be a little longer. But nonetheless, I'm glad we can finally connect here after the last time we tried to.
It's always fun to talk to you, though.
Well, thank you, Jim. And certainly it's always fun for us in Chicago to have you come and visit and share your unique talents with us for the holidays. And how many years you've been doing this now?
This year is the 20th anniversary of the holiday tour.
You were still in high school when you started this.
I'm gonna be totally honest and say it did seem a little bit easier when I was like 30. But on stage, all of that goes away. We were talking about that last night, how, you know, no matter how many, aches and pains you start to have, you don't have any of them when you hit the stage. It's a phenomenon about performers, I think.
Well, you know, I was thinking about it, and we've had the pleasure of having you on the show numerous times to chat, because you've been in Chicago so often and so forth. And I was thinking, to be able to do what you do, Jim, with the people that you do it, and to exude the feeling, the true, sincere feeling of Christmas and the holidays, and not only Christmas, because you do this for Valentine's Day also sometimes, you must have had a great holiday spirit and certainly enjoyed the holidays when you were young to be able to bring that and continue that legacy for all of us.
Well, most of that for me came through music, though. Mm-hmm. You know, even if the holidays were bittersweet, or, you know, even if it was a time, like we all have moments in our lives that aren't the, you know, perfect scenario.
Sure.
In fact, more often than not, actually. But I always found that music was a way to escape for me and to become joyful. If things weren't right, to me, music was the way that I connected to my emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the way that I made friends with people. It was the way that I spoke. It was like, you know, it's my personality. It just happens to come out of through my hands and out of an instrument instead of verbally.
Well, lucky for us to be able to enjoy it.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't figure that part out until a little bit later that was my way of communicating, you know, which is why I think it comes out so emotional, because it's really, it's my heart, you know, not my head. So I think that's the reason.
Were you a shy kid when you were young?
Oh, yes.
Really?
Extremely.
And how young were you when you started playing the piano?
I was about 5 years old.
Really?
And, you know, I think, as you know, from talking to so many performers, most performers, comedians, musicians, almost everybody that I've ever worked with is pretty much an introvert in life and an extrovert on stage. I'm an ambivert. That's what they call it.
Well, you know, it's fun because, you know, we had Johnny Mathis on the show here a while back, and of course you had a great hit with him, Sending You a Little Christmas. What a great,
and a nice,
I mean, here's a guy, and you know yourself, this guy is beyond being a famous performer, yet a down to earth, welcoming, sincerely engaging man.
Completely. Yeah. And we've talked about this, you know, I find that the bigger the star, the more, you know, honest, genuine, kind, respectful. And I really think, I mean, I think that when I think about icons that I've worked with, Kenny Rogers was mm-hmm. like that. Olivia Newton-John is like that.
Right.
You know, Donny Osmond is like that. These are all people who are household names. And I think that it's because they've seen the whole life of it, the ups, the downs, the reality of it. They've come to terms with what it is and what you're after or how it ends up being. And I think that that's the difference between people like that and up and comers sometimes who don't really have a sense of the, you know, the breadth of an entire career, how it always goes up and down.
A sense of balance, I think. That's a good way of putting it. Yeah.
You find it. It takes you a while, I think, but, you know, you do find it.
You know, you mentioned Olivia Newton-John. I had the pleasure of having her on the show, and the publicist said, well, you know, she's very busy. She only has about 10 minutes to talk. And we start chatting. Well, 20 minutes later, I said, you know what? I'm not sure the publicist is going to like this because she only said you had 10 minutes. She goes, oh, let's continue to talk. But that's the kind of person she is. She's like the girl in Greece, Sandy in Greece. That's what she's really like. She's that wholesome and nice and talkative and very friendly.
Very, very funny and charming. You know, one of the first tours that I ever got put on was a co-bill with her.
Really?
And,
wow.
Yeah. And I was, you know, it was probably 3 or 4 years into the career, and I had been doing some opening dates or something, but it was a co-bill, and she is the only performer that I've ever done a co-bill with in all my career who watched my set every night. She would be offstage watching the set.
Really?
You know, instead of like hiding and getting ready, I mean, she would be like in curlers or whatever, you know, mm-hmm. or in a bathroom, off on stage left, watching. And then after the show, when we would talk, she'd say, you know, I thought that was a really interesting choice you made about the story you told. Or, I mean, completely engaged and supportive. And it's never that way when you're most of the time that I've been on a co-bill. I don't even meet the person.
Really?
I opened for Whitney Houston mm-hmm. A few times. I've never met her.
Really?
You know, stuff like that. There are many, many times. I was on a co-bill with David Sanborn. Never met him. Melissa Manchester. I know her, but we actually didn't even see each other the night we performed together. Weird. I mean, it doesn't mean that the person isn't engaged, obviously.
Right.
I'm not saying that. It's just that I'm just saying that she was completely, you know, engaged in it and just the kindest person. When I asked her to do my TV special for PBS, she said, yeah, well, you know, if I'm free, of course. She didn't say, oh, talk to my manager, or how much are you paying, or anything. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the mark of somebody who does it because they love it. And does it with people that they like, and that taught me a lot, you know, about choosing the people that you tour with, that you know really are in your comfort zone and that make you feel good, and building that kind of family around you so that you can have a wonderful experience on the road. Donny Osmond was like that too when he was on my tour.
And that's a great compliment to you, because I don't want to use the word status, because I don't know you don't think that way, but certainly you have reached a certain level of status in doing what you're doing that people, it's an honor to be on the stage with you. It's like all those, what your album with Johnny Mathisam when he had all the different artists working with him, the duets. People gravitate towards that. You know, I'd like to sing with Jim Brickman. I'd like him to play the piano with me. I'd like to sing with Johnny Mathis. And people aspire to that. Chris Botti, you know.
Yeah, you know, it's not exactly that way, though. In the case of Johnny Mathis, that song was actually one that I asked him to sing on my album. And when I just always wanted to have him. When I stalked him for a while.
Oh, really?
Tend to do, yes. through his band, because that's the only the people that ever know me are the band, the musicians, the stars ever do. And so I asked this keyboard player if I could talk to the tour manager. So as it ended up, I sent him a bunch of songs to sing on my album.
Mm-hmm.
So then he agreed. And then when the record company heard the song, then they said, wow, this is really great. This should be on his duets album. And then not only was it on the album, but they titled the album the name of my song.
Yeah.
It actually didn't start out that way. It was the other way around. Same with Kenny Rogers. I didn't know Kenny Rogers,
mm-hmm.
but I stalked him. I went to his concert in Cleveland, and I stood at the stage door till he came out of the bus, and I walked up to him. And I introduced myself. It's the honest to God truth. I said, Mr. Rogers, which didn't come out right.
Yeah, right.
it's me, Jim Brickman, America's New Romantic Piano Station. You know?
Oh, sure.
But, you know, he goes, who? I mean, he really didn't know me. So then we walked in, and luckily the band was all from Nashville. So they all said, Penny, Jim Brickman, you know. You know, but I sent him about five songs, until then the sixth one, he didn't like any of what I sent, and I sent him the sixth one, and he loved it, and he ended up recording it. So I'm just ambitious, because I feel like the idea that I would even be considered to work with these people or have them sing my song, I feel like, well, enough people have done it that the resume is okay. I could ask people. I had Dolly Parton on my radio show the other day,
mm-hmm.
and I was, you know, this close to saying, so it's one degree of separation, Dolly, because I did a duet with Kenny. So
there you go.
Will you do a duet with me? You'd be next on my list.
Well, I understand Lady Gaga's looking for a pianist, Jimmy, so maybe you ought to stand outside her bus or something.
Yeah, you know what? When I first moved to L.A., I almost told Dolly Parton this, I would go around to talent agents and companies. I would look them up in the phone book. You know, you can look it up on the internet.
Sure.
They in L.A., I don't know why they do this, but they have the executive's name on their parking space.
Yeah.
You know, so it would say, like, Kevin Moore here or whatever, and then your Porsche would be right there.
Right.
And I would leave a note and a cassette on their windshield. I did this with Dolly Parton's manager at the time, Sandy Gallen, but they never called me.
You were the guy in the Grove going through all those cars. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, I did it with David Cassidy when I was a little kid. My mom was the reviewer for the newspaper, so uh-huh. we went to all these concerts, and so one day, you know, she would say, "All right, tonight we're going to Black Sabbath," you know, and I'm like 5 years old or something, and then tomorrow we're going to David Cassidy. So it was like a total come, and so he just did my TV special, the 70s. Concert special, and mm-hmm. I had David Cassidy, and I told him on the show, I said, you know, I sent you a song of mine backstage when I went to see you in concert, and you never called me. And I mean, I did it with Eric Carmen, who I loved, was from Cleveland, and you know, none of these people ever responded, so I had to wait till I was a grown-up, I guess.
Well, they know you now, I'm sure. They know you now.
Some of them.
Are you still in Cleveland? Because I'm finished now paying tuition at John Carroll, which I'm very happy about.
You're kidding.
Yeah, I'm finally finished. Yeah.
I am in Cleveland, and it couldn't be better. In fact, my co-host on my radio show, Bryn, went to John Carroll.
Oh, she did?
Yeah.
I wonder if she knows one of my kids. Gosh, there's enough of them that went there.
I'm sure.
And she's delightful. I've chatted with her. She's very delightful. Yeah. She's a nice lady.
She's great on the show, and I love doing it. It's been so much fun to do it from Cleveland. So
I miss Geraces, though, Jim.
You always say that.
I miss Geraces. I love Geraces.
You say Geraces.
Chagrin Falls and Shaker Heights. That was a great area.
That's where I lived for about, that's where I grew up, Shaker Heights.
I'll have to give Bren a call and tell her that she had to pay the same tuition as I did. That's very interesting.
Still is, I'm sure.
You're running around a lot for Christmas this year, all over the country. You got a lot of places you got to cover.
Yeah, we really do. You know, it's when I first started touring about 20 years ago, at Christmas, it was, you know, a few people were touring. Like, you had Mannheim Steamroller and right. And I was touring, and I think Kenny was doing his Christmas show. But over the years, you know, the amount of Christmas shows just, you know, has spawned so many theater productions. And, you know, you have The Grinch, and then you have, of course, Nutcracker and Christmas Carol. But you have White Christmas, and then you have, you know, Martin McBride's Christmas tour and Dave Koz's Christmas tour, and so it's harder to play one night in theaters when they have so much going on. So it makes the routing a little bit harder. You know, that's why it looks like Swiss cheese a little bit.
You got a small window, and people look forward to that. Though they come into that small window because they love to come out and see you. And you know, you have your guests with you, of course, Annie Cochran and Tracy Silverman, who've been with you many years, and now Chris Allen from American Idol.
Yeah, he's fantastic. Super nice guy and very talented, very, very laid back. And, you know, an example of kind of the opposite of what we're just talking about with iconic performers where, you know, one day you're kind of hanging out with your buddies, in Little Rock, Arkansas. And the next day you're, you know, on TV in front of millions of people. It's a pretty shocking thing.
But they feel very comfortable with you. They've been with you so many years, and certainly you can see that and you feel that because you have such a good rapport with everybody that's on the stage with you. And all the people, all the young people you've started in this business too, Jim, I think that's remarkable. You're always, you know, never hesitant to bring somebody new on stage and introduce them to that that life that you've made so successful for yourself.
Well, I even more so lately, I'm even more in a mode of helping young people, you know, guiding them. I don't do it for them. I mean, it's definitely a hard road, but the reason I feel so strongly about that is that it really wasn't there for me. I didn't have any help or guidance. I mean, you know, like I just described, I was, I was left to my own devices putting cassettes on people's car windshields because I didn't know any different. I just was completely naive. And, you know, it was a different time too, when, you know, you didn't have the possibility of going on a TV show or launching a career from that. But beyond that, I just didn't know anything about it. Nobody in my family was musical my mom was writing for the paper, but we didn't have any, I didn't have any guidance. Like, this is what you should do. It's one of the reasons that I think it took me so much longer to figure it out. I mean, I didn't get my record deal till I was 33. And, you know, guys like Chris Allen are like 29, you know what I mean? It's sort of like, it started late for me. So I want to help people, and I want if there's somebody who's talented that reminds me of myself, who has that kind of deer in the headlights look, like, you know, I'm talented, but I just don't know what to do. I like to help people like that because I feel like it's something to pass on and something that I didn't have.
You know, it's a way of saying thank you, too, for the success you've had. I heard a quote the other day, which is very touching. It says, gratitude is not only the greatest of the virtues, but it is also the parent of all the others. And it's just a way of saying thank you and sharing what you have. I think it's more than helping, it's sharing. You know, and as you share, as I said before, your unique talents with all of us when we're in the audience enjoying what you do, it's a way of saying thank you, you know, and we appreciate that.
Yeah.
We certainly do.
I mean, because you never, it never really hits, you know, any of these people. I mean, that's the other thing that a lot of the folks we were talking about before have in common is that they don't, you know, it's what they do, but they don't think of themselves that way. I had a dream the other night that I was, that I was famous. And I thought, it was so weird. Like, I woke up and I thought, I dreamt that I was famous. What does that mean? like, oh, that's right. Am I? You know, like, it's very strange. It's just, you know, when you become known for something, that, to me, that's where the appreciation and the gratitude comes from, is being able to be successful at doing what you love to do, not be famous for it, you know.
Well, here's an example and proof that you're famous, because when I go on Pandora, I can get Jim Brickman Radio, so you're famous.
Well, I could make that up.
And that's always fun to listen to. So people out there, you can listen to Jim Brickman on Pandora Radio. It's great. You know, it's always a pleasure to chat with you, my pal. Christmas tradition sparkles and holiday music fills the air as Grammy-nominated songwriter and piano sensation Jim Brickman embarks on his 30-city holiday tour, Comfort and Joy, performing at the Batavia Fine Arts Center and the Dominican University Performing Arts Center for his 20th annual holiday tour. Jim will debut original songs along with the sounds and stories of the season. Jim's special guests for 2016 are an all-star lineup of fan favorites, including Chris Allen, 2008 American Idol winner. Comfort and Joy Live will also feature fan favorite singer Annie Cochran and electric violinist Tracy Silverman. Jim Brickman's live concerts have become an annual holiday tradition, the gathering of family and friends with a beautiful backdrop of musical warmth and nostalgia. Again, Friday, December 2nd, 7:30 at Batavia Fine Arts Center. Saturday, December 3rd, 7:30 at Dominican University Performing Arts Center. And as always, Jim, it's always a pleasure to chat with you and kid around. And from myself and my family and all our listeners and your fans, thank you for sharing those unique talents with us. And if people can't see you at either of those venues, you'll be at the shopping center handing out CDs on the cars.
You
and
know what? Yes. My truck will be parked up front, and I'll be filling them out of the back of the pickup.
My pal, always a pleasure, and thank you, and happy holidays to you and your family. And, you know, always enjoy looking forward to chatting with you and seeing you, and safe travels, because you're doing a lot of that, my friend.
Thank you so much.
And I will give Dave Gallagher your best, too, when I chat with him.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
Thanks again, Jim.
Take care.
Jim Brickman, the very talented entertainer. Jesus, always a pleasure to chat with him. 20 years he's been doing this, so you know what he's doing is something that people always enjoy. He'll be at Batavia Fine Arts Center December 2nd at 7:30 and Dominican University Performing Arts Center December 3rd at 7:30. And, of course, you can go on his website to get some information about his tour, what's going on throughout the United States. Always enjoy chatting with Jim, and a very down-to-earth guy from Cleveland. And we thank Bryn, and we thank Dave Gallagher for arranging things. So no better way to say thank you than let's play one of his great musical compositions, and a classic for the holidays, The Gift. And we'll be back on The Kevin Moore Show.
When the snow is falling down, children laughing all around, are turning on like a fairy tale come true. Sitting by the fire we made, you're the answer when I prayed I would find someone, and baby I found you. And all I want is to hold you forever, and all I need is you more every day.
as you softly sleep, what I'd give if I could keep just this moment. If only time stood still, but the colors fade away, and the years will make us gray. But baby, in my eyes, you'll still be beautiful. And all I want is to hold you forever. All I need is you more every day. You saved my heart from being broken apart.
You gave your love away,
and I'm thankful
Brickman's The Gift. Always a fun chat with Jim. Always enjoy having him on my show. And we're back on The Kevin Moore Show. I have endeavored in this ghostly little book to raise the ghost of an idea which shall not put my readers out of humor with themselves, with each other, with the season, or with me. May it haunt their houses pleasantly and no one wish to lay it. Their faithful friend and servant in December of 1843, Charles Dickens. Marley was dead to begin with. There is no doubt whatever about that. The register of his burial was signed by the clergyman, the clerk, the undertaker, and the chief mourner. Scrooge signed it, and Scrooge's name was good upon change for anything he chose to put his hand to. Old Marley was as dead as a doornail. There is no doubt that Marley was dead. This must be distinctly understood, or nothing wonderful can come of the story I'm going to relate. And something wonderful is happening at the Goodman Theater. With new stage magic and Chicago favorites, Goodman Theater's A Christmas Carol hailed as the crown jewel of the holiday season, and no better way to get into the holiday spirit, takes the stage in its 39th year. Returning for his fourth year, Henry Wishcamper directs Charles Dickens' tale of hope and redemption. His production has been praised as wise and warm, sometimes about loss, sometimes renewal, always about treasuring our time huddled together as fellow passengers to the grave. And on the line with us right now is the award-winning artistic associate of the Goodman Theater, having directed plays nationwide at such venues at the Manhattan Theater Club, Atlantic Theater Company, the Old Globe, Williamstown Theater Festival, and the Portland Stage Company. Founder of Portland's Shakespeare in the Parks Festival, Drama League directing fellow and proud graduate of Yale University, now directing the 39th annual production of Charles Dickens' holiday classic, A Christmas Carol, at the Goodman Theater, 170 North Dearborn, through December 31st. And please welcome Mr. Henry Wishcamper. Henry, welcome back to the Kevin Moore Show.
Thanks for having me again. Pleasure to be with you.
Always a pleasure, and certainly an exciting time of year for all of us that we get to celebrate A Christmas Carol again with you.
Absolutely. It's great to be doing it again.
A great story that's 173 years young, and I think there's no better way to introduce it because it's something we always enjoy, and parents and grandparents and grandchildren and everyone is enjoying it again this year, and it spans the generations.
The response has been really extraordinary this year. It's been great to have audiences coming in and you know, people who are returning for the 10th, the 20th, the 30th time, as well as audiences who are either seeing it or seeing a play for the very first time.
You know, I defy anybody to come to the theater and not be a little misty during the course of the play, Henry.
It's an extraordinary story. I can't think of any story that is, you know, that has the same impact and that calls out to so many people to sort of return to it again and again on an annual basis. It's pretty amazing.
It's the responsibility as parents and grandparents and teachers and so forth that the theater should, and you as a director and being involved in the theater your life, the theater's responsibility is to stimulate and engage your imagination and stimulate and engage one's creativity and stimulate and engage one's intellect. And I think when you come to the Christmas Carol and enjoy it, it does all of those things.
Well, I hope so. And I'm glad to hear you say that. I mean, I do think that the story has an amazing connection for people. I also think that this production, since long before I took it over, has really stimulated people's imaginations and excited their intellects and, you know, has been a feast for their senses. It's a really large production. It's 26 actors. The scenery is stunning. And a lot of the special effects are quite magical and sophisticated. So it really is, I think, a pretty amazing way to expose particularly young people, to the true power of what theater can do.
How do you keep that creativity or that imagination going, trying to outdo yourself one year to the other? Because some things you're going to change and people are going to go, oh, I like that. Some people are going to go, I like the way it was.
Well, you know, I think one of the things that's truly amazing about the Goodman's Christmas Carol is the importance that the institution places on keeping it fresh and on always having elements of the production change. And, you know, for a show that is as deeply held a tradition as this show is, it's also constantly being reexamined and reinvented. We usually have our first meeting for the subsequent year's production while the current show is still in performance.
Is that right?
We can all talk about what we think could be changed while we still have a chance to see it again live in front of an audience. And then we work on it literally throughout the year. We have, you know, I don't think there's a month in the calendar year that we aren't actively working on thinking about how we can shake up and freshen the production.
You know, I was saying to my wife last night, because today is December 1st, of course, and we start the Advent calendar, all us Catholics, that's what we do. But also December 1st, I always reread the annotated version of A Christmas Carol. And I said to her last night, I said, you know, even though I've done this for so many years, there's something you take from this that you didn't get the last time you read it. And even when you come to A Christmas Carol, there's something you'll take away that you didn't get no matter how many times you've seen it, Henry.
Yeah, I agree completely. I tend, because of our schedule, to read it in September, and I'm always amazed by what I find new. And one of, you know, I do think that, you know, the change in the environment in American politics and culture makes all sorts of things in the story and in the show land differently. And sort of regardless of what your background is, I do think that the show feels particularly fresh and resonant this year.
I'm going to share a little essay that someone wrote about Goodman's Christmas Carol. It should be said that this is a scary show in the deepest sense of that word, but also a joyous one, because actually Dickens said this was a ghost story. On the one hand, it deals with selfishness, greed, the emotional scars that can come with poverty, and the fears of mortality. On the other hand, it's all about the power of love, the rewards of generosity of spirit as much as of person, redemption. It is full of ghosts, some benign, some terrifying, and it is full of family life in all its guises. And it's also full of music. And thank goodness for Mr. Fezziwig. Because he's a musical guy.
Well, I agree with everything in that. I mean, I very much think of the show as a ghost story. I think both the book itself and also our production are quite scary in many places. And I do think that one of the things that Dickens says throughout the book, but particularly in the future section, is that the worst thing that can happen to you is that you could die alone.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things that's so interesting about the story is that Scrooge has to be frightened deeply at his core in order to avoid the most horrifying thing that could happen to him. And that's something I think we, you know, we rarely allow ourselves to think about. And it is quite a frightening thought when you get quite, you know, down to it. But it's also something that you can do a lot about over the course of your life. And I think, you know, so much of the joy that Scrooge experiences at the end of the play comes out of the sense of fellowship and this newfound discovery of engaging with people, and that sort of is the core of the theatrical experience. We all come together in a room and we engage in something together. So there's a real synchronicity, I think,
and
between the message of the story and the act of attending the show.
And we enjoy watching that redemption of Scrooge. We experience that with him because Christmas is a time when want is keenly felt and abundance rejoices, and we sit there and we enjoy watching that change to generosity of spirit that metamorphosizes in Scrooge.
It is the sort of amazingly reflective time as well as a deeply emotional time of year, I think, for all people, and I think this story captures that.
So you're still now working on next year's production, the 40th.
Well, I already have a little list of things I want to do next year, and we'll have our first meeting as an institution in probably 2 or 3 weeks.
And, you know, it's nice because we see a lot, Henry, a lot of the same actors and actresses that have been in the productions for years come back and perform again. You know, I remember Brad Mott. Remember Bradley Mott? He played Fezziwig for so many years.
Absolutely.
Is he still around? What happened to Brad?
He is still around. I've seen him a couple times. He was in the show before I lived in Chicago, so I never got to see him do it live.
Oh, he was good.
I've heard he was fantastic. Yeah. He's a great actor.
Yeah. He lost most of his Fezziwig, though, because he thinned out a little bit, nonetheless.
It is a real family for those of us who do it every year. You know, you definitely do feel like you're celebrating the holidays with your family.
Well, what's next up for Henry Wishcamper?
Series of workshops that I'll be doing in January and February of some new plays. It's one of my favorite things that I get to do, and I'll be doing some teaching. So I've got a couple weeks to enjoy the holidays with my family, and then looking forward to getting back to it in the new year.
And I'm going to look forward to, of course, coming to see you. A Christmas Carol, as we do every year, and now I'm able to bring my grandchildren, which is even more fun.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, I'm bringing my kids for the first time this year.
Oh, that's terrific. That's terrific. That's terrific. That's terrific. Scrooge was better than his word. He did it all and infinitely more. And to Tiny Tim, who did not die, he was a second father. He became as good a friend, as good a master, and as good a man as the good old city knew, or any other good old city, town, or borough in the good old world. Some people laughed to see the alteration in him, but he let them laugh. His own heart laughed, and that was quite enough for him. He had no further intercourse with spirits, but lived upon the total abstinence principle ever afterwards. And it was always said of him that he knew how to keep Christmas well if any man alive possessed the knowledge. And may that be truly said of us and all of us. And so, as Tiny Tim observed, please join me, Henry. God bless us.
God bless us.
Everyone.
Everyone.
With new stage magic and Chicago favorites, Goodman Theater's A Christmas Carol hail is the crown jewel of the holiday season, and no better way to get into the holiday spirit. Takes the stage in its 39th year. Returning for his fourth year, Henry Wishcamper directs Charles Dickens' tale of hope and redemption. His production has been praised as wise and warm, sometimes about loss, sometimes renewal, always about treasuring our time huddled together as fellow passengers to the grave. And on the line with us is Henry Wishcamper, the director of the 39th annual production of Charles Dickens' holiday classic, A Christmas Carol, the Goodman Theater, 170 North Dearborn, through December 31st. For tickets, 312-443-3800. Henry, a delight chatting with you, as it always is. And from me and certainly all our listeners and all the people that are going to enjoy A Christmas Carol over the next month or so, thanks for taking the time and sharing your unique talents with all of us.
Well, thank you so much. I hope you enjoy the show this year.
And happy holiday season.
Same to you.
Thanks, Henry. Take care. Henry Wishcamper, the director of the 39th annual production of Charles Dickens's A Christmas Carol at the Goodman Theater, 170 North Dearborn, through December 31st. We've been enjoying it for 173 years and certainly want to continue that legacy. And the Goodman Theater is a wonderful place to do that with all the returning actors and actresses, of course, that have been we've enjoyed over all the years. And as Tiny Tim observed through Mr. Dickens, God bless us. Everyone. From columnist Michael Sneed of the Sun-Times, he always writes a story that she shares with us. It's entitled A Christmas Story. Michael writes, I once had a boss who felt a good story was worth repeating. I'm told this little yarn, which is a true story about a pal of mine and one I've printed in the past, has wound up on more than one refrigerator door and has generated a lovely response over the years. So here is the tale I've entitled Sam I Am. This is the Christmas story about a dad named Steve who has a son named Sam who learned the truth about Santa Claus on Christmas Eve. But like a good father, Steve worried about how his son was handling this turn in his life. So, Steve penned a note to Sam from Santa and left it under the tree. It read, Dear Sam, your dad stayed up last night to tell me that you now know as much about me as I do about you. Well, good. I'm glad you asked. And don't worry, no child ever really leaves me. Ask your mom, ask your dad. They know I don't live in the North Pole, too cold. They know I don't ride in a sleigh, too dangerous. Still, they love me, and so will you, even 50 years from now. Oh, and what do you think happened last night just as you were asking about me? Why, a baby was born out in Kalispell, Montana. That's right. Just as you were putting aside your belief, a brand new child was born who can put it to good use. So long as that keeps happening, Sam, I'll never be out of a job. Sam, I want to wish you a wonderful life. If you don't mind, I will continue to drop by on future Christmases just to make sure you're okay. Love, Santa. P.S. Remember, you don't have to believe in me to know I'm there. And that's the story of Steve and his son Sam. Take a little break and listen to a little music, Christmas music, one of my favorite songs from Jane Monheit. Have yourself a merry little Christmas. And we'll be back on The Kevin Moore Show.
I'll be home for Christmas. You can plan on me. Please have snow and mistletoe and presents on the tree. Christmas Eve will find me where the love light gleams. I'll be home for Christmas. If only in my dreams. Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Let your heart be light. From now on troubles will be out of sight, out of sight. Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Make the Yuletide game. From now on, our troubles will be miles away.
Jane Monheit, Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas. And we're back on the Kevin Moore Show. One thing I always enjoy, and my family does, is the poinsettia for the holidays, and something that's been very traditional. And this is the story of the legend of the poinsettia. Long ago, in a certain town in Mexico, it was the custom to lay gifts on the altar of the church on Christmas Eve for the Christ child. One Christmas Eve, a small peasant boy stood sadly outside the church, for he had no gift to give. He knelt on the ground to pray for the Christ child, and as he did so, a tiny tear, unbidden and unnoticed, fell from the child's eyes. As the little boy arose, he saw in astonishment that a plant was pushing up through the ground where he had knelt in prayer. He watched in ecstasy as a beautiful scarlet plant opened on the exact spot where his tears had fallen. The poinsettia was his gift to the Christ child, and as he lay it on the altar, there was a murmur of admiration from all the other people there as the flower's center radiated golden light. The flower's light was reflected in the little boy's expression, which glowed with love for the baby Jesus. So that's the legend of the poinsettia. When you see that all around the altars and all around the homes for Christmas, something to continue that legacy as we celebrate the Christmas season. Well, that about does it for our show today. I thank you for sharing this last hour with me and hope you, our listeners, have enjoyed this time as much as I have. I'd especially like to thank our guest, Jim Brickman, our good friend. It's always enjoyable to have him on the show. He will be appearing Friday, December 2nd at 7:30 at Batavia Fine Arts Center, 1201 Main Street in Batavia. For information, 630-937-8930. And then the next evening, Saturday, December 3rd at 7:30 at Dominican University Performing Arts Center in River Forest, 7900 West Division. For information, 708-366-2590. We certainly wish he and his family a great holiday season. And Henry Wishcamper, the director of the 39th annual production of the Charles Dickens holiday classic, A Christmas Carol, at the Goodman Theater, 170 North Dearborn, through December 31st. For information, 312-443-3800. Finally, a famous writer once said, one ought every day at least to hear a little song, read a good poem, see a fine picture, and if it were possible, to speak a few reasonable words. I hope on our show today we have, at the very least, done just that, spoken a few reasonable words. At that, I'd like to wish everyone a good week, and as that British group once said, and in the end, the love that you take is equal to the love that you make. Have a great day.
I know the way I feel for you. It's now or never. The more I love, the more that I'm afraid. In your eyes I may not see forever. Forever. If we can be the best of lovers, yet be the best of friends. If we can try with every day to make it better as it grows, any luck then I suppose. The music, the music.